Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day with a goal of informing and motivating listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on 5 regional stations, as well as 4 additional stations in Virginia. There's now a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities. We sincerely need your help to accomplish this mission. Your support of any amount is needed to take this next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support us in this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale.
Go to fcbcatjax.com and click the donate button, or send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258. Attention radio. Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood.
Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen, for joining in today on Let's Face the Issues. We're talking about a very serious issue. They're killing people. We're talking about the medical society today, the medical staff, those that are in leadership, the AMA, and all of the physicians that are connected to the hospitals. You might ask the question, why is that so? Because they're forbidden, hear me, physicians in America today are forbidden to write a prescription or to give a prescription advice to any patient if that prescription is not approved by the CDC. If the protocol is not approved by the CDC and the doctors carry it out, the physicians are being prosecuted and persecuted. Looking at an article that says doctors could have medical license revoked for COVID misinformation, as they call it. We're talking about that today on this broadcast. The telephone number is 831-0917, 831-0917. Greg, thank you for hanging in there. I know it's been a while, but I'm delighted that you could take time out of your schedule to talk with us today. Ladies and gentlemen, I have on the line with me Greg Youngblood, one of our sons. I'm thankful that he is knowledgeable of this subject. Greg, I'm looking at an article here where the medical staff demanded that a mother be removed from the hospital right here in Jacksonville. It says, mother escorted from the hospital in handcuffs for refusing to leave her recovering daughter's side in violation of COVID rules, according to the hospital. This article reads, and I'll just read a blurb of it, and we'll talk about it. An elderly mother in Jacksonville, Florida, spent the night in jail last week for violating a local hospital's COVID-19 rules by refusing to leave the bedside of her daughter, who had just undergone brain surgery after suffering a stroke. Lynn Savage, 70 years old, was escorted from the hospital in handcuffs and booked in the county jail for trespassing Tuesday night, according to WJAX-TV. But she has no regrets over her actions. Quote, the mother speaking now, I stand by my actions 100%. I'm not sorry that I made them take me out of there in handcuffs, the dedicated mother told the news outlet. She had been by her daughter Amber's side since 6:30 a.m. that day following the surgery. The news outlet noted that Savage's daughter is currently nonverbal and paralyzed on the right side after suffering a stroke, that Savage was present at the hospital for support and to serve as an interpreter for her daughter. But when 7 p.m. rolled around, a nurse notified Savage that the visiting hours had ended and she would have to leave. As per COVID-19 health guidelines, Savage refused to do so. Quote, I could not in good conscience and good heart leave my daughter's bedside not knowing how she was going to make it through the night voluntarily, she said. She noted that a doctor had asked her to come in the intensive care unit to calm her daughter down during post-surgery. As soon as I approached the bedside, she was fine, Savage recalled. With all these people talking and all these things going on around her, she doesn't understand it and not able to talk. She was just frantic as a result of it. This is the mother now speaking. As a former deputy sheriff in Ohio, Savage knew that her refusal would ultimately lead to, as she stayed away. She later told the law enforcement that she preferred arrest to voluntarily abandoning her daughter, according to the report. Savage confirmed to the news media that she spent 24 hours in the Duval County Jail now has an October 20th date in the court. Everyone, ladies and gentlemen, everyone should call, should email, and should demand that this be changed in the state of Florida. Greg, what is your response to that? How should we respond as Christians, as parents, as loved ones, when across the nation, hospitals close its doors to any patient's family, friends, or relatives that could be there to encourage, to comfort, and to support the health that is needed in that individual that's the patient? What do you say? How do you respond to it?
I'd like for you to all hear the words. Pretend they're telling you, you need to sit in the back of the bus. That's the kind of language you need to hear. You need to understand. You need to understand the historical reference there. You need to understand that every patient needs an advocate. Okay, and if, yes. when a professional medical advocate. By the way, those doctors and nurses, I love a lot of them. I think some of them are trying their best, but they are not your relatives, your loved ones' best patient advocate. The best patient advocate is an informed, loving family member. And guess what they're not allowing in most hospitals across the United States today? They're not allowing informed, loving family members to stay with their family member, their loved one, in the hospital. And why is that the case? I want you to analyze how, let me give you a scenario. You show up at the hospital and you have COVID, Wuhan flu symptoms, and they give you a test and they go, okay, you got the Wu flu. Let me give you some cough medicine and send you home. Now, why'd they offer you cough medicine and not monoclonal antibodies? Why'd they offer you cough medicine instead of some legitimate antiviral? Why'd they do that? Well, follow the money, folks. Early on in this game, and it is a game to those people that are number crunchers, it is a game, and it is a sick, perverse, merchant of death game. Because early on, the hospital will get $70,000 for a COVID admission, okay? But you need to have certain criteria to be admitted. So they send you home with cough medicine. Guess what you're going to do? You're going to get sicker. You're going to get sicker. And you're going to come back, and you're going to be an admission. Congratulations. Now, you fast forward in this process, and 3 days, 5 days, 8 days in, they're going to put you on a ventilator because you can't breathe anymore. And you're going to have family members that are watching this from a distance and say, can we get monoclonal antibodies? They go, oh, no, we can't do that. That should have been done in the first 7 to 10 days. Well, why didn't you do that? Follow the money, folks. Follow the money. Today, that number, unless the money's run out, because, you know, the federal government's spending money like there's no end to it. Now, that number dropped to $50,000 per admission. And, of course, at one time they had bonuses for putting you on this sick. They had some kind of additional monies if you went on a ventilator, whereas 80% of folks that go on a ventilator don't come off a ventilator until they go into a casket, okay? This is perverse. This is as perverse as it can be, and that they separate you from. Then let's analyze another scenario. Your loved one goes in the hospital, and within a couple of days, they go, we think you've got a blood clot, and they start putting, well, matter of fact, they may do it on day one before anything. Let's put you on 3-a-day high-dose blood thinners, and then when you begin to bleed out and we have to do a surgical intervention immediately, you go on a ventilator. By the way, they created the circumstance. Now, listen, folks, hear me. Is this going on in your life or a family member's life? Does that sound familiar? Does it sound familiar to be given remdesivir and then your kidneys shut down and then organ by organ shuts down in your body? Remdesivir is $2,700 for a dose. They have legit antivirals that won't destroy your kidneys, but they don't cost $2,700 for a dose. Do any of the call in. If these things are starting to sound familiar to you, maybe call in. Maybe a loved one has gotten the shot that they're trying to force on everybody here. Maybe a loved one's gotten a shot and 3 days later they had a stroke. Does that sound familiar? They had a heart attack, had myocarditis, pericarditis, something else. One of the hundreds of thousands. Oh, you thought your loved one was all alone? You're not alone. This is going on across the United States and around the world. But guess what? Your major pharmaceutical companies love it. And they love the idea that everyone will be forced to take a jab and then come back 4 to 6 months later and take another jab, and come back 4 to 6 months later and take another jab, because that's hundreds of billions of dollars.
They're setting up, Greg, an endless cycle for that coming back for jab after jab after jab. Ladies and gentlemen, that telephone is 831-0917, 831-0917. Have you been chased out of the hospital? Have you been told that you can't stay with your loved one in the hospital? Have you been demeaned as a result of your desire to be with them? I'd love to hear from you. I've got information that I want to share with this audience today. And I'm going to share this over and over and over. For the state of Florida, we have someone that's in the governor's cabinet. Her name is Tiffany Voss, V-A-U-S-E. She's the deputy chief of staff for the Florida Agency for Health Administration in the state of Florida. Her telephone number is 850, that's the area code, 850-412-3614. That's 850-412-3614, or an alternative number, 850-567-2133, 850-567-2133. She is in the position to hear your cry, to hear your complaint, to hear what has taken place with you and your family or your family member or your loved one that's in the hospital that you can't see now, that you've been told that you can't enter because of COVID regulations. Ladies and gentlemen, that is a farce. That is absolutely phony. And they're using COVID as the excuse to kill our loved ones in the hospital. You say, well, that's just being melodramatic. No, it's not. Greg, I've got an article that's a five-page article. If you'd bear with me, I'm going to read three or four paragraphs, then we're going to discuss it. Title of this article, How Hospitals Kill Our Loved Ones and Conceal It. And ladies and gentlemen, this article is written by one that you know. He is a physician. In fact, according to this article, he is the director of Yale University Prevention Research Center at Griffin Hospital. The director of Yale University Prevention Research Center at Griffin Hospital. It is Dr. David L. Katz, K-A-T-Z, a medical doctor and an MPH contributor, according to this article. The title above is not quite complete. The title, keep in mind, How Hospitals Kill Our Loved Ones and Conceal It. The title is not quite complete. The full title for this piece is How Hospitals Conspire to Kill Our Loved Ones and Conceal It Even from Themselves. It was a bit too long, so he says, I shortened the title. Ladies and gentlemen, the doctors and the nurses can suit up and put a mask on and go into the room to see your loved one, but they're saying that you can't, that we can't, that you can't put on the PPE outfit and go in with a mask or a shield and gloves and a gown and coverings over your shoes. Whatever they use, can it be done for moms and dads and brothers and sisters to go in and visit our loved ones in the hospital? Certainly it can. This writer goes continually, he says, the distinction, though, is important. This is not about nefarious conspiracy or and willful deception. Rather, it is about an insidious conspiracy of benevolent and unwitting delusion. It is about a system populated mostly by genuinely caring and often highly expert people. Nonetheless, devolves into routine and dangerous dysfunctions. The clear and present danger to our loved ones and ourselves is less the occasional failure of the system to meet the standards, and more the constant application of substandard regressed into to mean of its own frequent failings. We all know the old adage, lie often enough, loud enough, and becomes the truth, albeit pernicious truth. The hospital corollary is this, a lapse of repeated comes to define the standard of care. Over the past week or so, I've had a loved one in the hospital. I won't say which loved one, and only note that is someone very close to me. And by the way, the end result of this six-page article, his loved one, this doctor's loved one, died in the hospital because of malfeasance and the failure to treat properly. Continuing this, he said, I won't say what hospital or name the condition either. This is indeed an indictment, but not of any given provider or facility. My indictment is of the system at large, so no one need be named, let alone blamed. In fact, there are many individuals in the mix here for whom I have only deep gratitude. My loved one is an older person in her upper 70s. She is, however, or at least until now been quite healthy and vital and very active. Her series of nearly lethal, unfortunate events were set in motion by early orthopedic procedure in the service of the vital and other activities. She still loves to bike and to hike and to ski, lesser, etc. Make a long story short in this article, ladies and gentlemen, she had surgery. And after the surgery, there were complications. The complications, they started administering different drugs and differing things, and those drugs caused differing problems. Then they gave other drugs and other procedures for those problems. The article here says, we had made the mistake of the night prior thinking she was fairly stable or not having a family member to stay alongside her overnight. Subsequently, receiving a diuretic in the ICU to correct the fluid overload, our patient was put into a state of acute fluid depletion, dropping her blood pressure to 40. Of course, a blood pressure that low triggers alarms in the ICU, and who would have resulted in the response of the care team. At some point, but family, not the alarm, got their attention immediately. This is not because of lack of human decency, but because hospitals are routinely understaffed and staff on hand are overworked, overwhelmed, and concerned to have any alarm causing further fatigue. It goes on to talk about, had my loved one arrested, the code team would have arrived and attempted to resuscitate her. They would have succeeded or failed. Had they succeeded, she would now need to recover. Not only from the established problems, but from the arrest, intubation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, it goes on to talk about. But the problem, this doctor says in his writing, is the fact that hospitals are not allowing family members to stay in the hospital room. In fact, one nurse in our family background says, don't ever leave your loved one in the hospital alone. Don't ever leave them alone. Always be there by their bedside as an advocate. That advocacy of the family members has been cut out, shut down, and disallowed, and they are therefore killing our loved ones today. Now, part of that is as a result of the CDC and their protocol, which ties the hands of a physician. Doctors are being prosecuted today if they do not follow the CDC protocol. Here's an article that says doctors could have medical license revoked for COVID misinformation. What they're calling misinformation, if a doctor gives correct information about HCQ and ivermectin and what can be a prophylactic or a cure for COVID-19, that's considered misinformation by the CDC and the Biden Health Administration. Greg, hold on a moment. I believe we have Melody on the line. Go ahead with the question or comment, please. Hello.
Hello, Dr. Youngblood. How are you today?
Yes, ma'am. Great. I hope you are.
I am blessed. Thank you very much. I understand that you're talking about people being denied or kicked out of the hospital. I put my son in September the 15th due to high, he's diabetic, so his blood sugar was over 600, and I thought he was about ready to go into a diabetic coma. The minute we got in there, however, all they said was COVA, COVA, COVA. And I said, look, I brought him in for his blood sugar. I want you to check his, well, he's got COVA. And I says, well, I think you need to check him first. And so they were trying to put him, intubate him then before they even tested him. Mm-hmm. And he said no. And I said no too. Well, I had... doctor came in and said, well, this is a COVA. And I says, well, how do you know? Have you tested him? Well, we're going to test him. And I says, well, then don't start this COVA with me. I says, I brought him in for blood sugar. He says, well, this is COVA, and this is how we do. This is our protocol, and you have to leave. And I looked at her, and I says, and who are you? And she said, oh, I'm Dr. So-and-so. I says, well, that would have been nice to start with. My whole experience with this hospital that I went to had been horrendous. Every time I called to get information about him, it was different every time. I could not even speak to a doctor. They kept him a hostage for almost a month. And the only thing that saved him is I smuggled in ivermectin and high dose of vitamin C for him. So they are out there trying to killed them. They even came to me when he refused to be intubated and said, oh, you need to talk to your son. And I said, yeah, I will. His wishes are not to be intubated, and I suggest you do that.
Well, let me give you a good example. My wife had my wife and I both went through the horrors of COVID. We're both treated at home with HCQ and ivermectin, and a physician here in Jacksonville that knows how to treat a patient prophylactically and after taking it, and we survived. However, part of the way through that, my wife had to go to the Baptist South Hospital to receive more oxygen, and she told the nurse, as being as she was being put into the emergency room care, she told the nurse, whatever happens, no ventilator. The nurse just politely turns to her and said, well, we'll just have to let you die then. That's the protocol that's being used today in our hospitals. That's the mindset. Greg, what we've got Greg on the line also. Greg, how do you respond to Melody's statement, what took place with her and her son? How do you respond to that? What are the questions that people need to ask themselves? What's the action that we need to take today?
I'm almost of the opinion we need to have, as much as they have you sign financial obligation papers and releases when you go in the hospital, it's almost like we could form our own contract and have them sign off that you'll not be separated from the patient the whole time that they're there. But they're making decisions that are financial-based decisions, administrative decisions, central control decisions that have very little, if anything, to do with the patient's care. Now, centralized controls killed over 100 million people in the last century under the rule in China and the rule in Russia. Do you think centralized controls have gotten any better today? No, they haven't. But the CDC's rolled these things out, and a bunch of attorneys have rolled these things out. Administrative talking heads like Fauci that haven't treated a patient in three decades, those individuals are making decisions that are costing tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of lives. And, of course, many of them are being driven – I'm sorry, they're being driven financially. Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, again, the pharmaceutical companies will make hundreds of billions of dollars off this. The major medical groups, they've turned into monopolies across the United States where you can't get a word in edgewise, where literally your opinion, your direction, your drive means nothing to them, but they've become monopolies that control your very life. By the way, anybody out there, I believe you should look up the term against medical advice. Now, I believe kind of across the board, call your attorney, ask him if this makes sense. You can walk out of a hospital, sign the paperwork against medical advice. The thing is, you have to have somewhere. You better have somewhere to go. You better have somewhere to go. And they have so blocked us in to the point that they think you have nowhere to go. If you leave this hospital, you're going to have to go to another hospital that's going to follow the same rules and drive you down the same pathway to death.
Yes.
By the way, on that note, a 29-year-old girl recently went to a physician, new physician, and the physician asked her, hey, honey, have you gotten your COVID vaccine yet?
No.
And she said no. And this doctor honestly said, good, honey, it's killing folks. How you like that? You're not going to get that out of a physician that's walking in lockstep.
They're few and far between. That is the story.
That honesty is what we need more of in America today, and we see very little of it.
Yes, Greg and Melody both listen. An individual just texted me and said, the only thing worse than a person suffering with dying of a virus is being separated from our family members and dying of loneliness. And that's exactly what is happening today. I had a 91-year-old man that was related to our congregation, was in a nursing home, 91 years old, already started into a dementia state. And for 30 days before he died, screaming every day with every awakened breath, where is my family? Where is my wife? Why have they abandoned me? He died in the nursing home feeling that he was abandoned by his family. And that's what we're finding across America today. And I would suggest to everyone under the sound of my voice, Melody and others listening, everyone under the sound of my voice, contact the governor's office, the governor's cabinet.
Yes.
There's a lady that's Tiffany Voss via USE. She's the deputy chief of staff for the Florida Agency for Health Administration. Her telephone number is 1-850-412-3614, 850-567-2133. Those two telephone numbers, blow the phone up. Make it ring off the hook. Let them know that in Florida, we're fed up with, we're tired of killing our loved ones without the family members being able to have any say-so, rejecting any of our recommendations. When our son was dying in the hospital in Virginia, we recommended to the physicians ivermectin. We recommended they use HCQ. They rejected anything that would have been a health care or a saving factor of his life. They refused to accept anything.
And another thing they do, Dr. Youngblood, is they wanted to give him remdesivir, which is a drug that shuts down your organs.
Yes.
And they had tried that on him years ago because he had pneumonia. And I told them, I called up and said, because I got a list of all medication he was on. Every day I would get a new list, and it was changing. Well, they told me about this remdesivir, and I said, I'll tell you what, you need to write this down right now. If you give my son that, you will kill him. Oh, what do you mean? I says, write it down. You will kill my son if you give him that drug. He cannot take it. He's taken it before, and he almost died. I said, so if you want to kill him, give it to him. And I'm telling you now and making the documentation on it. You've got to be tough with these people.
Absolutely.
And I don't like that, but you've got to.
We've got to. If anybody's going to do it, we must be the family. Melody, our time's about out, but thank you so much for your call. God bless you. Continue to pray. Keep on looking up. And of all things, call the governor's office. Let them know that we're dissatisfied, we're angry in the state of Florida, and we want it changed. Thank you for your call, Melody. Greg, we've got about a minute left on the broadcast. Based on all that we've said, and I think that this subject deserves another hearing, and we're going to extend this over through tomorrow's broadcast so that everyone can understand what we need to do and what's happening. Most are not recognizing what's taking place. Greg, how do we wrap this broadcast up today that will be a challenge to our listeners and an encouragement to them also?
Well, this has been a challenge for me, and I shared this on Facebook. Philippians 4:8 that we oftentimes quote, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, think on these things. That is a challenge today for the believer because the world seems to be coming apart. But I have news for you. God is still on his throne today.
Amen. Amen. Greg, thank you so much for joining us. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining in Let's Face the Issues. Looking forward to meeting you next time on the air as once again we face the issues.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, located 1/2 mile south of I-295. FCBC invites you to tune in nightly, 9 to 9:45 p.m., for expository preaching on 91.3, 91.7, and 91.9 FM. You are invited to worship with them 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal Bible study. Prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in the same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard in its entirety 9 p.m. on 100.3 FM and 93.3 HD3. You're also invited to tune in Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. on Talk 100.3 for expository preaching. Tune in and invite others to listen.